final speaker of the session is Brendan Newlton, and Brendan is the projects officer at Cultas Kiltori Éireann. It's a nonprofit organization promoting Irish music and culture. At Cultas, he looks after technology-related projects, including the digitization of the Cultas Traditional Music Archive. Brendan earned an MA in ethnomusicology at the University of Limerick, where he studied the application of copyright law to Irish traditional music. He studied music composition as an undergraduate at Penn State and then at the Juilliard School in New York, and is certified by Microsoft and Sun as a technical architect. And Brendan is going to be speaking to us today about transforming the Cultas Traditional Irish Music Archive. Please welcome Brendan.
Gramagad, Jigwitz, Brendan O'Tanis, and I'm done. Is Tamayafka Transkara, like Cultas Kiltori Éireann. I'm delighted to be here this afternoon. It's my first ARSC conference, so I'm sure you'll all be very nice to me. As you can probably tell by my accent, I'm not actually a native of Ireland. In fact, I used to live on 26th and O Street here in the district, but as a naturalized Irish citizen, I take my adopted culture very seriously. So that's actually where I work these days, at Cultas Kiltori Éireann, which is a nonprofit organization with branches around the world working to preserve and promote Irish music, song, dance, and language. We organize thousands of weekly classes through our hundreds of branches, and we run some major festivals of Irish music. We have 17 outreach centers within Ireland, and those will form the core of our newly organized traditional music archive. So you might consider Cultas Kiltori Éireann within the music revival framework laid out by Livingston and others. We have all of the hallmarks of a revival movement, including a reliance on informants and our original sources, such as historical sound recordings. So what we do on a large scale and at a very local level is connect people who want to participate in traditional Irish culture with others who are already active participants. So we connect students with teachers, we connect festival organizers with their own local communities, we connect audiences with concert tours. So we're in the connecting people business, which is very much in the information business these days. One way that we connect people is to make recordings, which simultaneously connect regions and generations, playing a vital part in the process of transmission, which used to be very much a function within the family. Much of our national collection consists of unpublished field recordings made on open reel magnetic tape. Our former music officer, the well-known singer and flute player Seamus MacMahuna, made thousands of these informal recordings, mostly in the 70s and 80s. Since the end of the 80s, we've been collecting video material, much of it collected by button accordion teacher and videographer Willie Fogarty. Moving away from what we hold centrally at our library in Monkstown, County Dublin, we also have substantial archival holdings in counties Clare, Sligo, Tyrone, and Cork. In the longer term, our goal is to make Irish music more readily available to the diaspora, which will necessarily involve using internet technologies just because of the geographic reach involved. We'd also like to collaborate with other cultural repositories to create a common platform for traditional music in particular, though that's probably a bit in the future. Our governing philosophy would make us very sympathetic to the library community goals of free and open access to cultural material. So what are we organizing? Our current collection includes audio, video, images, documents, periodicals, books, tunes, and songs, along the results from our various competitions. So here are just a couple of examples. Our print library includes books, memorabilia, and documents, including some historic music collections and festival programs. We have lots and lots more to scan in over the next few years. Our photo collection currently includes pictures of musicians and music ensembles, along with other scenes from Cultas events. Locally, we have quite a few more photographs still yet to scan and catalog. The periodicals we're collecting include our own in-house journal, Tror, along with newspaper and magazine clippings relating to Irish traditional culture over the years. Again, there are very large collections that have yet to be indexed. We're hoping that the scanned and searchable volumes of our own journal should open up some avenues for research in the world of Irish music revival, at least as seen by Cultas Kiltori Éireann. Throughout the 40-year history of that publication, we've published contributed articles and tunes from many of the most influential Irish traditional musicians. The core of our collection, though, is audio. And though we do collect commercial recordings of interest to Irish musicians, the bulk of our material consists of field recordings. Identifications for many of these tracks is very difficult. Even naming the tunes being played is a significant challenge. So to improve the quality of our index over time, we'll be inviting our archive patrons to submit suggestions for tune names through the web interface of the software and highlighting this feature in the site navigation as well. Currently, we have just about 25,000 tracks of audio digitized and cataloged, with a lot more yet to come. Here's just a bit from a 1975 field recording of clarinet musician Bobby Casey. For this tune, we've actually transcribed the playing itself, something so labor-intensive that we'll be doing transcription only for some very special items in the archive. However, we do hope to identify tracks well enough to easily connect all of the instances of a particular musical composition, either instrumental tune or song. So I'll just play a bit and you can follow along. Our video collection is the most recent part of the catalog and very much the most difficult to manage and distribute from a technical point of view. We've been making video records of our major festivals and many of our concerts since about 1990. And last year, we've started a video podcast on our website to share some of this material, where I've been posting a new clip every day. Radio Telefisaren, the Irish national broadcaster, has recently offered us a good chunk of the television recordings made at Colta's events, which will be a very welcome addition. We've also conducted a number of interviews with musicians. Just play a couple short excerpts.
Now, where did you get your songs from?
Well, my songs, I got my songs from old people in our own country there. Got Caroline from Edinburgh town, from a man you called him Paddy McCann, and you called him Big House Paddy because he lived in a two-story house, you see, and he was great.
It's fine, and there is music in the air. The Ballyvoney branch of Cultus Culturi Éireann holds its annual Éanlach Ceoil, or musical fair, in the second week of July. Throughout the year, Cultus Culturi, through its branches all over Ireland, organises festivals of Irish music.
I play two Irish jigs here. I wrote these, I don't know, over the past couple of years. They're both for my two grandmothers. The first one is called Nora Sweeney. And Elizabeth Cullen.
Good. I guess I can't talk.
So, our goal with this archive project is to fill in the timeline of Irish cultural traditions with a very rich and usable tool built specifically for engaging with an ethnographic collection and usable by musicians and part-time archivists. Unlike other libraries, we have both the challenge and the opportunity of starting from scratch, building a system that will best fit the needs of traditional music community. So for reasons that I'll go into in a minute, we examined and rejected a number of archive management systems before deciding to build our own web-based system. Popular media and academics have made the assumption that we've always had a central archive, but the reality is that, like many other aspects of Cultus, our archival holdings were decentralized and inconsistent, even fragmented. Local musicians and local collectors pursued their passions, but without oversight or guidance on a national level. So this evolution parallels the gradual consolidation of national-level governance for the organization itself. Cultus began as a far more local structure than it is now. We've managed to grow to, 400 branches worldwide and 30,000 members without ever defining a common schema, cataloging system, or technical standard for the management of our collected recordings and memorabilia until now. So our solution is only slightly radical, but very faithful to our history. Rather than bring everything into our headquarters in Monkstown, we're leaving the archive decentralized, and we'll even accept a certain amount of local inconsistency. But we are developing a consistent database, a consistent process, and a consistent catalog for the first time. We'll learn enough about the local context to index it on a fine-grained level, digitize it, and then put it back on the shelf. We'll put workstations in each of these local archives for the free use of the public. Of course, this approach does require that facilities and training for archiving activity can be provided locally, which means that largely non-technical, part-time, and volunteer archivists will be doing most of the audio-video transfers, cataloging, and scanning. So right away, this requirement eliminated most commercial MARC-based library management systems from consideration just because of the learning curve involved. This also keeps truly high-end video and audio processing out of reach for us. We're relying instead on prosumer formats that are widely supported, including a DV-based video workflow built around Final Cut Express and an audio workflow using inexpensive tools like GarageBand with simple outboard digital-to-analog conversion and almost no signal processing. Each local center is being equipped with two good iMacs, one for the archivist function and one to be used by visiting researchers, along with outboard audio mixers, powered monitors, cassette decks, microphones, and video gear to capture VHS or other consumer formats. Of course, the secret to making this work is the digitization. By gradually creating reasonably high-quality digital copies of our collection, we accomplish two things. First, we account for the degradation of media formats, but secondly, we can make access copies of many local collections available at the same time, find links between local collections instantly, and deliver a consistent research experience in each of our centers, leaving the master tapes to be stored locally. So when it came to actually building the common catalog, we realized that we didn't have an accurate idea of the access points that researchers would use to engage with our collections. So rather than guess, we figured we'd just ask them. So following Dahlan Norman's framework for user-centered design, we conducted interviews with students, players, and music teachers who form our core audience. We found that they generally don't know the particular recording that they're looking for, so uniform titles are less useful to us, and a good search function is really going to be used almost all the time. Subject classification schemes, the ones that we looked at were mostly too general to fit our subject queries because the material was too similar. And our most popular searches would probably be by a person's name, followed by a region, and followed by a tune name. So many of our potential patrons actually know their fields of study extremely well, and so collectively hold invaluable expertise in the identification of assets. So what we've decided to do is that we need to keep the end users as partners in the process of cataloging and working with material in the archive. So this implies a number of things. We'll make it very easy for a researcher to submit suggestions for alternate song or tune titles, suggestions on performer names and video clips, suggestions for more relevant keywords. Those suggestions will in turn drive future searches. We'll also accept and display general comments on all of our material so that if you know something else about the provenance or context of an item, you can share that knowledge with others very easily. My experience on our own website at coldest.ie shows that our users are generally delighted to participate, and the general standard of information required is extremely high. Third, we'll institute a simple rating system so that visitors can collectively decide which clips are of most interest to them. And lastly, allowing visitors to group and comment on material in playlists, letting them group together material that they feel ought to be connected. This is one of our biggest problems with a collection that is in many ways very homogeneous. So these playlists can be easily shared with other users and saved to come back to in the course of a research project. A teacher might define a playlist of South Sligo flute styles, for example, and easily share that playlist with students. When we were talking to archivists, several gave us examples of interesting memorabilia, photographs, newspaper cuttings, and so forth in their local collections. Researchers never ask for this material because they don't know it exists. But when an archivist shows them something, they're absolutely hooked and can't stop browsing. So we're trying to facilitate this type of experience within our catalog using principles of ambient findability. So rather than limiting searches to single media silos, for example, in any search we highlight all of the images, articles, documents, and tunes that might be of interest, with the goal of taking the researcher down an interesting and perhaps unexpected path. So we had some requirements, but when we looked at the existing field of audiovisual management tools and library management systems, we just couldn't find anything that was simple enough for non-technical users but comprehensive enough to include all of our various media types. Library management systems were very much geared towards work with one and only one title, with an identifiable author and performer, with a known publisher and year, a non-trivial subject, and so forth. Our field recordings, newspaper clippings, books, amateur videos, and competition results were just too different for us to cram into a common system. We also had problems with granularity because most of the interesting bits for our users are down at the track level, so any system that could only manage recording level metadata would miss most of our interesting searches. We had a lot of trouble with the intangibles, the non-physical context, which we needed to know about in order to properly catalog the collection. In our case, that means people, music compositions, and regions. Most of our material could be related through these things. If we knew a person's biography, we could probably relate musical items which they had written or performed, and given a region of Ireland, often not a political boundary but something more amorphous, we could identify a style of playing. Managing what in library terms would be these, you know, sorts of tables of authority was a big problem with some of the systems we evaluated. We needed a very simple way to link people to recordings or images in any role, but then later to disambiguate or merge people we'd identified, group people into ensembles, and so forth. Similarly, a single tune in the abstract might have a dozen different names, and there might be half a dozen known in different settings of the tune, not counting the innumerable or ornamented or variated versions found in the recordings themselves. So the tunes needed their own authority listings, relating the alternate titles and settings directly to the various books where tunes had been collected and notated. At the same time, there are thriving sites on the internet where Irish music enthusiasts talk about tunes and their variations, and so we wanted to link into those sources of information and discussion as well. We also wanted to leverage the existing de facto standard for the notation of traditional monophonic music. The ABC standard is very simple, it's cross-platform and easy to use, and is used as the standard storage format for most online tune databases. Since we had ABC formatted notation for most of our own published tune books, it made sense to store the notation in our system and then render tunes on the fly as necessary. So the more we looked at our requirements, the more it seemed to make sense to just develop our own management system, at least for the moment. So along with a Dublin web application firm called Contrast, we're building the software from scratch using open source tools like Ruby, Rails, and MySQL. In keeping with the cooperative nature of archives, we'll be making our software and database open source so that others can build on our work. Ideally, we'd like to start developing a common open standard for the sharing of traditional music metadata, which will probably be a subset of the mods XML format. So the end system will include automated transcoding of digital media into various proxy and preview formats required. As you can see, the primary interface is search-based, and audiovisual media are an integral part of the design. The user can find things based on simple keyword searches or more advanced combinations of terms and expand the details of a given item without interrupting the playable media. For archivists, updating catalog data is simple as in-place editing, clicking edit, making a change, and saving back. So you see our bibliographic record, the archivist makes some sort of edit, they change it, they go back to where it was. All very straightforward. So that's a quick overview of our collection and our current project to develop a content management system and digital asset management system from scratch. It's ambitious, but by focusing on the needs of the traditional music community very specifically, we're creating a collection that will be well-tailored for the subject matter. Generic requirements can lead to generic systems, but not always to the right solution in a given domain. So you've been hearing about a transformation from geographically disparate boxes of source material into an integrated traditional music archive, what Tony Seeger calls a place of discovery, excitement, and joy. We'd love to hear from you as the project progresses, and we'll be announcing the archive at Flakjón na hÉireann, our biggest annual festival, on the 24th of August later this year. I'll just finish up with a clip from the archive.
It's not very short or it's not very long. It's about the Flakjón down in Ennis, you see. So to me, will you pay your attention? I'm not a great singer, but I know there are worse. I cannot help trying to sing you a verse that will let you all know how the Flakjón got on. And for you now who couldn't attend these, they came from the north and they came from the east. From the west and the south was a thriller to see, with fiddles and bagpipes and piccolos too, and drumsticks to keep them in order. They came down from Dublin, so hearty and gay. They brought Leo Rosem to show them the way. Himself and Sean Seary, they played all the way with their flute player Vincent O'Brodre. Skiddery idle dum diddery dum diddery diddy. They came down from Cavan, so far, far away. I'm sure they were travelling for most of a day with singers and players, the best I can say, to compete at the flat down in Ennis. Their players were good and their singers were keen, but Margaret O'Reilly was the best of the team, and Big Dr. Galligan, he wore the bonneen, just a swank at the flat down in Ennis. From the kingdom of Kerry they all made their way, and brave Dennis Murphy, he started to play the old flog and reel and the black up a tay. Sure you'd feel 10 times younger right after. From Limerick Fair City they came by the score, and Johnny McMahon, he played an encore, and the bold Andy Cain, sure he played as much more, and to finish he played Colonel Fraser. Skiddery idle dum diddery dum diddery diddy. From Wicklow and Carlow they all fell in line, and up from Port Arlington came Johnny Ryan. He resined his bow and he watched every line, for he won the first prize on the violin. From Galway there came every man and his wife, with Eddie Maloney who played on the fife, and young Kieran Collins would make the dead rise when he played us the lark in the morning. There was music and song from all over Clare, the Max of Crosheen and sure all the Mulcairs, the Mike Preston Trio and Martin Mulhare, not forgetting the Mr. Joe Leary. Mrs. Crotty, she came all the way from Kilrush. She took a high note for the bird on the bush. She played all the day and she never did blush. 'Twas good girl yourself, Mrs. Crotty.
Go to Mina Margaret O'Guller. There is the Irish Traditional Music Archive, which is a state funded by the Arts Council. They have most of the archives of Radio Telefísa Éireann. The question was about whether there was another national archive in Ireland. Our organization, as a private nonprofit, has collected a very different category of field recordings. Because our brief is primarily about education and transmission rather than preservation, our ambitions for making our archive material available go far beyond what the Irish Traditional Music Archive in Merrion Square in Dublin want to do. They say they're fine with people showing up and making appointments between 9 and 5 when they're in Dublin, you know, except for an hour for lunch, and you still can't take copies of anything and take a pencil into the room with you and all the rest. My goal as someone whose responsibility is mostly to teach Irish music, I figure if I can't put it up online with sound clips and video bits and ways to relate all the tunes together, I don't see why I'm, you know, bothering to maintain all these tapes. Thanks so much. Sir, Craig. Yeah, the question is on moderation of any user-suggested input to the catalog data. Yes, the idea is that anything entered by users we don't know about, especially, will be reviewed by an archivist, probably after the fact. I mean, I've tried this on our own website, and I've always found that whenever I post a video clip, if I don't know the name and so I can't put it under the clip, the first comment I get is, oh, what's the name of the second tune? And then the second comment is, oh, it's this guy's and he played it this thing. And someone else will say, well, I always knew it as this thing. And, you know, so far, you know, the comments I've gotten from users, even with a very broad-based, no login required website, has been always very much to the point. You know, a little bit of problem with spam, but nothing not manageable. I haven't had any yet in the few years of doing that. I haven't had anything that's been notably inaccurate, or at least that would be considered inaccurate outside of the local context, because these things do vary a good bit from region to region. So, look at it. Yes? Yes, their catalog is up. Yes. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Please. Their website is lovely, and their stated goal is to put all of their catalog data online, which they have been doing and making great progress with over the past couple of years. Their policy, though, is not to post any audio or video clip until they have written permission from the musician or all musicians or all people who are in the room when the thing was made. This is severely limiting the number of clips that they put in. I mean, the clips that they have are in the dozens out of a collection of more than 250,000 records. So we're taking a somewhat different approach. Our reading of Irish copyright law says that because these are recordings that we generally have the copyright in the recording itself, there are, of course, the question of performance rights and other moral rights associated with the performers. But our policy is to assume that because someone was captured for our archive, that we can make the archive available to identified individual patrons who have given us, you know, enough information that we know who the researcher actually is. So it's a difference in stance. I wouldn't see Nick Carolyn with the ITMA really going much beyond that. He doesn't really see it in his remit. Yes, sir.
Do you have a working URL now?
Well, yes, but you'll need a password to get in. It'll be at archive.cultus.ie, which is where it is at the moment and where it's being developed. We're still fixing bugs and importing data. We're really having all the archivists spend the summer going over all the catalog data again, listening to everything again, make sure we've got all the attributions right, and fix in anything we can. I'll make it publicly available at Flakjalnaharan at the end of August, where I'll probably have the Irish Prime Minister flip a big red switch on stage at the Caliban competition or something like that, which will be fun. Are there questions, comments?
We have a little bit of time, so if anyone had a question for any of our other speakers, if they don't mind giving questions, we can certainly do that. No? Okay, well, I'd like to thank all three of our speakers. I think everyone's presentation was very inspiring. So, big hand to all of them. Also, thank you for being such a nice audience and having such great discussions and having such good feedback for our speakers. So, I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thanks very much for hosting.